Yes. So in good morning, Daisy. Good morning. Good to see you. Very good to see you. Okay. All right. Yes, we just.
You're on radio.
Yay, we're on. We just started. It's all good. Okay. So it's Perek Zayin, if anybody has a Chumash Perek Zayin, and we are looking at Pasuk Gimel. Yes, Pasuk Gimel. So it's on page 3 of the booklet, and it's Pasuk Gimel. We've read this, and I just want to reread this Pasuk, because this is where we're going to start discussing. So we mentioned the special princes, the Nesiim, and we said, what did they bring? Vayaviu es karbanam lefnei Hashem. They brought their sacrifices before Hashem. And interestingly, look what it lists as the sacrifices. Sheish eglois tzav. Six, and here they translate tzav as covered, six covered wagons. As we said, ushnei asar bakar and 12 cattle, agala, al shnei ha-nesiyim, for two nesiyim, right? They donated it together. V'shar la'echad v'yakrivu oisam lifnei ha-mishkan. So it was a wagon for each two princes and an ox for each, and they brought them before the mishkan. As we read this one last time, but interestingly that you see that the carbon here seems to be these wagons also. Fascinating. Even though these wagons and these cattle, I mean, the cattle weren't brought as a carbon, they were going to be kept, as we said, to carry the items of the Mishkan. It's still considered, according to some opinions, a concept of a carbon, because it's like their donation. According to some opinions, you have to look at it a little bit differently, that they brought these wagons. It's true that the wagons would be kept in the Mishkan and be used for the Mishkan, but when the Nesiim brought them, they actually filled them with all of their sacrifices that they were going to be offering on that special day. So perhaps that's why it says es karbanam, and that's also why maybe it uses that word tzav. Here they translate as covered. According to some opinions, it means full, because the wagons weren't empty wagons. They were full of all the materials that the Nesiim wanted to bring for the sacrifices. I just got a drop out of order just for a second. I just want to tell you what tzav means. It's such a funny, it's an unusual word. Let's see if there's a Rashi first. Rashi just says that tzav is covered wagons. But there's different opinions about what tzav means. So some people say that, some of the Mefarshim explain that tzav is like a turtle, and it was slow and heavy, moving like a turtle. So that's why they were called tzavim. I guess they were very overfull, and therefore they moved quite slowly. Another thing was, there was another interesting word, that they danced. It's like, I guess it was part of the dancing in the sense where they would, if you imagine the wagon sort of jumping along on the road as they're bringing their sacrifices, and later on as they're carrying all the items of the Mishkan. And also tzava, like an army. That's where tzav comes from, because when you have wagons that are able to transport something, especially in such an organized way, so it's like, as we say, it's like a sort of a organized, well-run army, a legion of Hashem transporting his holy Mishkan. So that's also the idea. And as we said, also full. Okay, so these are the special wagons that in a minute we also have to, we're going to discuss soon. As we mentioned last week, there was something very, very special about them. But just before we get more details about the, you know, sort of the Mefarshim, there's just one or two more Midrashim I wanted to share about the interesting thing that happened on that day. So here the Nesiim are coming, they brought these wagons. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't accept them initially, but then Hashem said to him to accept them, and they're bringing not only these wagons, but their special sacrifices that they have. It says that before that, I know we mentioned last week, but I just want to re-mention one important thing. This was a special day. It was called, as we say, Yom HaShmini, the eighth day, the day of the dedication. It was the first day that the Mishkan is really a holy, where Hashem is going to rest his Shekhinah in it. So it says very interestingly, the Medrash tells us that, as we mentioned last week, who is the Kohen? Gadol is Aaron. Up until this point, Moshe Rabbeinu was leading. Now Moshe steps aside and says, Aaron, it's your turn. And it says, the Medrash says that Aaron was hesitant. He was extremely hesitant. Remember last time we said because of his sensitivity to Moshe, but there's another reason he was hesitant. He tried to approach and start doing his service, and the Medrash says, every time he tried to approach, you mentioned the word bull, he somehow, the Mizbeach took on the shape of a bull in his mind. It like had that image, and he kept like sort of pulling back. And the Medrash explains it was because of his guilt that he felt that he had been part of the sin of the Chet HaEgel. So he wasn't sure that he was worthy to now lead the Jewish people in this holy task of bringing all these karbanos. Until Moshe Rabbeinu assured him and says, you have totally been forgiven, you have no part in it, you should just keep going, and start doing what you're meant to be doing, and you will see that Hashem will bless, you know, will reveal himself. So what happens? Aaron Taka steps forward, starts to do all the different things he's supposed to do, amongst which, as we said, was blessing the Jewish people. And then what happens is, and the karbanos are all set out, and they're all there on the Mizbeach, but the Shechina, the fire, doesn't come down. It doesn't come down. Now Aaron's really nervous, because originally he was very hesitant, and now he says, oh, see, I was right to be hesitant, because the reason the Shechina's not coming down is probably because I'm not worthy. And he actually gets a little bit upset. He says, you're embarrassing me. Like he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, this is really embarrassing. The Shechina is not coming down. So it explains that both Moshe and Aaron together, they went into the Mishkan, and they threw themselves down before Hashem and begged and cried and screamed. And these are famous words that we have in chapter 90, Perek Tzadik in Tehillim, and we say it on Shabbos. They asked Hashem, they said, V'hi noyam Hashem aleikenu aleinu, umaisi yadeinu koinenu aleinu, umaisi yadeinu koinenehu. Those words might sound familiar. We say them Shabbos on Friday night. May the Shechina rest upon our handiwork. They were asking Hashem that he should please reveal himself. This is a terrible situation. Finally, the fire of the Shechina appeared, and the entire nation witnessed the pillar of fire that came down. And it says an interesting thing. The question is, and then when they beheld the miracle, then they fell on their face again and thanked Hashem and praised Hashem. But why? Why did Hashem need them to beg him? Right? They did everything right. Here they were, and Hashem had promised them, this was the day, Aaron is doing all the jobs. Why didn't the fire just come down after Aaron had put the sacrifices on the Mizbeach? Why? So the Medrash tells us something very beautiful. He says, actually, interesting thing. This was an important lesson. We as Jews realize that we do have certain rituals that we do. Of course, some of our mitzvahs are like kind of rituals, and they are very important. And sacrifices are also important. But what we have to remember, it's not the external sacrifice that accomplishes anything. It's the internal kavana, right? It's the intention, and it's the davening, and it's the turning to Hashem. And this is what Hashem wanted them to see, that Moshe and Aaron, when things weren't going so well, so what did they do? They cried out to Hashem. And when they cried out to Hashem, that's when his Shechina revealed himself. Not when they put the animal specifically on the Mizbeach, it was rather them communicating with Hashem. So that's why it sort of needed that step, a very, very, very important step in the process. One more important thing that I wanted to share about that day. So this day, as we said, is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and it is, as we say, a very, very, very special, considered an extremely special day. Following this Rosh Chodesh Nisan was the 12 special days where the princes each day bring their own sacrifice. So it makes 12 or 13 days of incredible celebration. But it explains that that day of Rosh Chodesh Nisan specifically was considered like one of the most special days since the creation of the world, equal in holiness to the day of the giving of the Torah, of Matan Torah, to the point that there were 10 special things, just like 10 dibrais, 10 special things that take place. The Medrash tells us, first of all, it was a Sunday, like the first day of creation. Hashem made sure it was equal to the first day of creation. It's like, this is the whole purpose of creation of the world. The other thing is that it's the fact that the Nesiim are bringing their special karbanos. This is the first time that the Kohanim were going to be doing their Aveda. Up until now, it was Moshe or a Bechor maybe had a special, I don't know, place. But here it was the Kohanim, and they were going to be working. This, now we had for the first time the concept of a Korban Sibar. Korban Sibar is a communal sacrifice. Up until now, you only had individual sacrifices. Also over here, we had the heavenly fire, as we said, that finally came down. So the Shechina really was there. And also the sacrifices were eaten within the specific area. So there were very specific laws. The Shechina settles in the Mishkan. The Kohanim bless for the first time, as we said, with the Birchas Kayanin. For the first time, the Jews were not permitted to bring sacrifices wherever they wanted. They had to specifically come to the Mishkan. And also, it becomes the first month, right? As we say in the Jewish calendar, we have two first months, Tishrei, but also Nisan. Nisan is really the first month in the Chumash, and this becomes because of this. So these 10 different experiences that they had, and some are miraculous, have to do with the fact that this is equal to creation of the world with 10 sayings, and to the Aseres HaDibrois, which Hashem gave us, Matan Torah, the Torah with. And this is the specialness of this day. Just to make sure we understand, because this is really part of the whole experience of what's happening here. This sets the tone for what's going to happen next. Okay, now, I just want to make sure, I think we've basically done everything, yeah? Okay, so now I want to go a little bit more into this detail of what happens here, because we do know that there are many things that are happening on that day. We're not going to talk about this at length, and we did mention this once, but one negative thing that happened, very negative, was that was the day that that Aaron lost his two sons, right? That's the day that they died. So it's a very interesting day, that day. It's like, it's such a, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's such an extreme day of celebration, of holiness, of revelation, and also of tragedy, right? Nadav and Avihu passes away on that day. But this is, in our parsha, we don't deal with Nadav and Avihu. We, as we said, we are dealing with one specific aspect of that day, and that is specifically, as we say, the concept of the princes of the tribes. We mentioned last time, and this is very important to keep in mind, why were the princes of the tribe so eager here? Because they had lost out initially when it came the day after Yom Kippur, and the Jewish people ran home from Moshe Rabbeinu. It says, when Moshe Rabbeinu told them about the Mishkan the day after Yom Kippur, even before he finished talking, they ran, the Jewish people. They didn't even wait for him to, like, excuse them, to leave, because they were worried maybe Moshe, who's so wealthy, he has enough of his own things, maybe he's going to donate everything to the Mishkan, and nothing will be left for them. That's how eager they were. And we know what happened to the Nasiim. By the time they came, there was nothing left. So here they're not making that mistake again, and they're extremely eager to be very much part of this day. Okay, so this is a very, very important part of the process that's happening here. Okay, now I just wanted to see one more thing before we go into the Psukim and the Mefarshim. As we mentioned, very, very important to note that they bring it, and now Moshe is a little bit hesitant. He doesn't know if he could accept it. One of the main reasons is because it seems to be that he was told that in order to accept anything, you need to be given permission from Hashem. You can't, the Mishkan is not to be done on your own. It's not something that he could decide at whim, this looks good, this seems right, you know, this would add to the celebration. Everything had to be directly, so to speak, instructed from Hashem. And Hashem did allow him to take, and he encouraged him to take from the Nasiim, and said this is very much a part of the process of the inauguration. So Moshe Rabbeinu did. I'm sorry, it's a bit technical, but I just want to share one more technical thing, and we'll go into the Psukim a little bit more. Interesting, what was Moshe Rabbeinu confused about? So it says Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't sure about a few things, because when the Nasiim were coming with their offerings, they were very interesting, different things that weren't the usual. That whole day, lots of things weren't the usual, but there were things that were never, that weren't the usual and wouldn't actually be done again. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't even sure if it was acceptable on a one-time basis. So I'll give you an example. So first of all, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't, as we mentioned last time, he didn't even know if the Mishkan should be carried on wagons, right? That in itself he was hesitant about, because he thought that the Levium would have to carry everything. I mean, they're crazy heavy, and we'll see today how heavy, but he didn't know. So that was his first hesitation. The next thing also, it says that he didn't know if there was even supposed to be a specific ceremony to inaugurate the Mizbeach. He didn't know that. Hashem didn't seem to have told him that before. He didn't know if you can accept, they brought sacrifices, amongst which was a chatas, a sin offering. Usually, that is brought as a communal. Here the Nasiim are coming as individuals. He doesn't know if he's permitted to accept an individual sin offering from each prince when it's not, especially no, because it's not brought as for a specific sin. It was like more of a general thing they're bringing it. He didn't know if that's acceptable. The other thing also, he didn't know if all the Nasiim should bring their sacrifices on the same day. Maybe all 12 should line up, and on this first day, Rish Chodesh, they should all come and they should all be able to bring it. That's not what happened. We'll see in a minute. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know. Wasn't sure. Also, could they be brought on Shabbos? Because these were not communal offerings. Were they be is it permitted? Because if you're going to go one per day, well, there's 12, there's definitely going to be a Shabbos involved. He also, just interesting things that he wasn't sure about. And then Hashem said, it says four words, Hashem said, one prince each day. You can accept the offerings, one prince each day. And that answered almost all of his questions. Because first of all, it showed him for sure he could accept it. He could accept everything they're giving. They have to do it not on the same day they have to do it. And that means even Shabbos they're permitted. So it answered all of his questions and it gave him the understanding of how the process should work. Okay, so that's what actually happened. The princes did bring one per day, their sacrifices, and we're going to see soon that was also an interesting issue a little bit, because every single one of the Nesiim wanted to be first. They didn't want to be last, they didn't want to be second, they wanted to be first. Sounds like they were so eager and so excited, and they didn't want to be not just less than, but they didn't want to wait. They just couldn't wait. And who's to decide which order, who's going to be first, who's going to be second, how's it going to work? And the truth is, we know that the first one was from the tribe of Yehuda. Now, after Yehuda brought his, so Yehuda, maybe we can understand, you know, he's the line of royalty, so he comes first. After he brought his, Reuven came knocking, like, I should be second, because, I mean, I'm the Bechor, okay, I gave up, but but no, he wasn't second. The second one was Yisachar, because Hashem said to Moshe that how they're going to bring it is how they camped and how they traveled. Remember the order that they did that. Now, Reuven wasn't so impressed, but didn't have a choice. But it explains something very beautiful. Why is it that Yisachar really had the schus, the merit to be second? Because his prince, Nisan el Ben Suar, was the one that gave the whole idea of bringing these sacrifices. When the Nesiim were despondent, and especially when it came the first day of the Mishkan, right? And now everything that the Jewish people had donated was there, right? Do you understand what it means? It means that you look at the Mishkan and you see, there's my gold, there's my silver, there's my copper. So it even brought home to them even more the loss that they had had in their wrong cheshbon that they made. So Nisan el Ben Suar said, no, you're not allowed to be despondent. That's not the way a Jew works. We will do something to make up for it. Let's figure it out. So first of all, he figured out the idea of the wagons. He said they're going to need something to carry. And then he said, not only that, we can even bring special sacrifices, make it into a special day. So this is his idea. So he got to be second. But Hashem did want it to be according to the way they traveled. And that's the order by which they actually brought the karbanis, the sacrifices. And every day when the Nasi would bring their sacrifice, this was really, it's interesting because he's a Nasi, so you think he's representing his tribe. In a way he is, but really these were individual, like he was bringing it because he wanted to. So every day he would go home and his whole family would have a massive, feast and everything. It was like a whole day of celebration for that Nasi and for his close family and his close friends on the day that he had brought that. So it was quite an incredible thing, special over 12 days. And we mark it, we say it in Nisan, every day after davening, there's a paragraph that we say that's called the Nesiim. I can show you after in the Siddur, which you say the Nasi of that day. You say what he brought every single day. The name of the Nasi and what he brought. Yeah. Okay. So now coming back into the Chumash that we have. So we were on page 3 in the actual Chumash. And we're going to go back a little bit and forth. I'm sorry, because there's the Psukim and then there's the commentaries. But let's just read another. I think we might have read a few of the Psukim, actually. I think we should go straight into the Mefarshim. So the next Rashi, we said that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't accept it until Hashem said, and then we also said that they were eager because of what had happened when it came time to build the Mishkan. Go to page number 4 of your booklet, and I'll show you something. When you look in page number 4, okay, so here it says in Pasuk Hey, right, Kach Me'itam, so Hashem actually tells Moshe Rabbeinu, take it from them. V'hoyu la'avaydes avaydes ayel meyed, and it will be to perform the work of the Oyel Moed of the Mishkan, v'nasata isam el ha-Levim, give it to the Levim, ishkifi avaydasa, as we said, each man according to his work. And we mentioned last time, depending on the heaviness of the work, is how much wagons they got. So very, very quickly, look, it says kifi avaydasa in Rashi 7, in accordance with their work, shahaya masa b'nei Gershon, for the burden of the sons of Gershon, was kal, Mishel Merari, was lighter, right? Because shahayu noisim, they were carrying the krushim, the beams. That was the house of Merari, were carrying the beams, and the pillars, and the sockets, adonim. That was extremely, extremely, extremely heavy, so that's why they received 4 wagons, and Gershon, who carries the curtains, receives 2 wagons. Okay, I just want to see if we should do the next Rashi. No, okay. Oh, yeah, just one more thing. As we said, Kahas doesn't get any wagons. Why don't they get any wagons? And this is in Pasuk Tes. Let's look at Pasuk Tes. I think we didn't read that one. Uvilivnei Kahas. So this is still on page 4. Pasuk Tes. Vilivnei Kahas. Loi Nosan. But the house of Kahas didn't get. Why? Ki avayd zakaydash aleim. Because they have the holy work. Because safely so, they carry it on their shoulder. And that's because since they were carrying all of the vessels, they don't put it on wagons. That definitely doesn't go on wagons. That gets carried on their shoulders. Okay, now I want to show you like this. Let's go to on page number 5, to Pasuk Yud. Vayakrivu hanasiim es chanukas hamizbeach. And the princes brought the offerings for the inauguration of the mizbeach. Biyoyim hi moshach aysai, on the day it was anointed. Vayakrivu hanasiim es karbanum lufne hamizbeach. And the princes brought their offerings before the mizbeach. And now we come to this Pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu is being told exactly what to do now, because he wasn't sure. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Hashem il Moshe. So Hashem says to Moshe, Nosi echad layoim, one prince per day. Nosi echad layoim, one prince per day. Yakrivu es karbanim, they should bring their sacrifices. L'chanukas hamizbeach, for the offering, for the inauguration. As we know, it's a Chanukah. We actually also say this on Chanukah. For the inauguration of the mizbeach, we do. This is what it is. This is the chanukas hamizbeach. This is the dedication. And this is the actual making the Mishkan be used properly. Just want to see. Yeah, I want to read one more pasuk just to show you how it works. If you go into, it's page 5, still, and then it'll go into page 6. So it's pasuk Yud Beis, Vayihi, and it was, as we said, Hamakriv Bayim Harishain, the one who brought on the first day Es Karbana his carbon, Nachshain Ben Aminadav, Nachshain the son of Aminadav, Lemate Yehuda, to the tribe of Yehuda. One more pasuk, because it's something very beautiful. The karbonoi karas kesef. And his karbon, see, he says, and his karbon was, let's see exactly, a silver bowl. Okay, so we're going to see they donated interesting things. Next week, we're going to see the meaning of them, because I have to see a general lesson before that today. But just to see what they brought. They brought a silver bowl, achas, one, shloishim umeya mishkala, so its weight was 130 shekel, Miz, and a shekel is about 11 grams, that's what it seems. Mizrak echad kesef, one basin of silver. Shivim shekel, which was 70 shekel. B'shekel akaydesh, in the holy shekel measure. Shneyem meleim soile, so both of them, right? So one was a bowl, one was a basin. And they were both filled with fine flour. Blula bashemen, mixed with oil. Lemincha, for a meal offering. This is part. Then the next pasuk continues with what they brought. Kaf achas asara zahav, one ladle, so like one spoon, which was of 10 shekel of gold. So it was made of gold and it was worth 10 shekel. Mleya kateres, filled with incense. And then the animals that they brought. Par echad ben bakar, one young bull. Ayel echad, one ram. Keves echad, one sheep. And ben shnasai of a year old, la'ayla, as an ayla offering. And then se'ir izim echad l'chatas, as we said, they brought also a carbon chatas, one he-goat for a sin offering, u'lezevach hashlam. And you see, they're bringing all different kinds of karbonis. An ayla, you see that, it's amazing. Ayla, that's the one that goes all up to Hashem. Chatas is the sin offering. And then, as we see, lezevach hashlamim, shlamim is the shalom offering. That's the one where they share, right? The owner, and the kayin, and the mizbeach, each get a part. That's the shlamim. So they brought all types of karbonis, u'lezevach hashlamim, and what do they bring for that? Bakar shnayim. So they bring 2 cattle, eilim chamisha, so it's 5 rams, atudim chamisha, and 5 he-goats, Kvasim b'nei shana chamisha, and the five sheep, and how old were they? B'nei shana, in their first year. And ze korban Nachshon ben Aminadav. This is the korban of Nachshon ben Aminadav. Now, I want to tell you something. Each thing is symbolic. There's nothing not symbolic. And we're going to see. There are many different explanations. And the Me'am Lo Yodiyot have fascinating. We're going to see Rashi's one next week, which brings from the Medrash. But fascinatingly, if you're going to look in the Chumash, you'll see this is very long. And we're not going to go through all of them individually. We're not going to read them because it's the same. What happens is that we repeat 12 times. Each one of the Nesi'im, of these princes, brought exactly the same offering. And yet the Torah, what does it do? It doesn't say, well, on the second day comes Nisanel ben Tzur from Shevet Yisachar, and he brings the same as before. No, it lists it exactly the same way, in exactly the same detail. Each of the 12 Shvatim, each of the 12 Nesi'im, sorry, that bring it, their names are mentioned individually, and their Karbanos are mentioned individually. And not only that, but later on we'll see they give a sum total to everything also. Why? Why so much repetition? The Torah is so, so exact. Why so much repetition? The importance, okay. So in what way do you mean? In and of itself, right. Okay, so giving, yes, so that's right. So that's a very important part. So the individual bringing the korban, even though it's exactly the same as the person before him.
It is just as, it's not just the same, it's in and of itself.
Okay, it's a fascinating thing. The reason the Torah does this is literally for the respect and the dignity of each of these Nesi'im. They all wanted to bring it first. Remember we said. Because if they would only say it once, then the first guy would have it, right? He would have his name. Hashem says, no, you can't all bring it on the same day. I want it over 12 days. But I'm going to tell you something. That the person who brings it the 12th, the 11th, the 10th is the same as the first, second, and third. They're equal. You are all donating with all of your hearts sincerely. To me, it is as dear each one. You are each, as you said, an individual. Whether you bring what looks like the same or not, you are an individual, and I treat you and I value you in the same way. That's one thing. There's another interesting thing, which I know you're also saying, it's a fascinating concept, that I say we're going to discuss more next week. We're going to see how it works. It's an unbelievable thing, that although they brought exactly the same carbon, right? Exactly the same thing, the same amount of cows, same amount of sheep, the same amount, everything, weighing exactly the same amount. Fascinatingly enough, each tribe, each Nasi, when they brought theirs, had an individual kavana. And Hashem knew, obviously he knows, but Hashem valued, and Hashem paid attention, and Hashem understood the individuality of each of the Nesi'im. It's similar to us, you know, we open up the same siddur, and it's a different davening for each of us, right? I could say the same words, even in ourselves. One day we say the same words, the next day we say, doesn't mean the same thing to us. But here you see something very powerful, that there is a unity. It's an incredible unity. But a unity doesn't mean that you dissolve your individuality. It means that you collect all the individuality and you make it one because you're focusing on Hashem. And this is the beauty of what's happening here. And that's why it has to be repeated 12 times, because the truth is, it was actually different. It was different. It was the same and it was different. And as I say, next week, we're going to see how each one of these show that. Okay, one more thing is that Rashi, when he tells us the meaning, the significance, if you want to say, of these karbanis, where does he mention it? Actually, not by Nachshon. He mentions it by the second one. Interestingly enough, he mentions it by Nisanel ben Tzur. And the reason is because it was Nisanel's idea, so Rashi gave him the kavod to explain it on his psukim, fascinatingly enough. Okay, but as I said, there was something very, very important. We're going to come, I just want to make sure with these sheets that we have is not waste. We're going to use them next week again because I have to see exactly the details. Just want to see which mefarshim. Yes, Reb Riva, sure.
The thing here is from a different, one is mineral, one is vegetable, and then there's the animal, and then the person that brings the korban is the human.
That's it.
So it's all the elements of the world.
Amazing, amazing, 100%. Very, very, yeah, you're right. And they made sure to include everything in it, 100%.
That's everything that is mineral, vegetable, animal.
And all there, 100%. It's incredible. And this is it, yes. It's like, that's what the Nesi'im show us, that we can live our whole life, every aspect of our life can be used to serve Hashem and should be used, as you say. Yeah, it's amazing. And it really encompasses, yeah, it's a complete, it's actually magnificent. Very, very much thought went into every single detail of what and how they did it. Yes, okay. I wanted to see which mefarshim I missed inside, and then I want to share a beautiful idea. Okay, you know, go to page number 12 in your booklet. Page number 12, I want to show you something. There's a very nice a svarnu here. Just do this one inside. On page 12, that's 10. Okay. Let's see, page 12, beautiful. So here, the Sfarnu says, Heim Nesi'ei Hamatais, right? We're talking about them as the princes of each of the tribes. So it says, Umitzad ma shehoyu kach, hikriv kol echad mehem ba'ad shiftoi va'anoshav. Since they were the princes of the tribe, right? They were like the representative. So obviously they're bringing it on behalf of their tribe, on behalf of their people. Ki mitzad ma she'omdu al ha'pkudim, because they were the ones who actually, interesting, they were the ones who were also assisting Moshe Rabbeinu when they counted the people. Hirgish kol echad mehem, each one of them felt b'shiftai in his tribe, shektsasai choshud ba'averois, that some might have suspicion of some sins, umitzad ma she'hayu nesi'im, and sins, in other words, when they went to count the Jewish people, which had happened just before that. See, they were the princes. What does a prince mean? So in the world, you know, to be a leader means perhaps you think you're controlling everybody. But how we look at a leader, a nasi, you know, we say hanasi hu hakol, right? Moshe Rabbeinu. What is Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu has a neshama klolis, a neshama which has a spark of each of our neshamas in it, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu feels responsible for each and every one of us, and he feels each and every one of us as a part of himself. He feels so deeply connected to each and every one of us, both with love and responsibility. So when we make a mistake, or if we have a lack, Moshe feels that, whether it be a lack spiritually or physically. And that's what these Nesi'im, they were real leaders. They felt their people. So therefore, when they went to count them and they got to really know them, they saw that there was some, you know, lack over there. Some of them had done some things that weren't so okay. And they felt a sense of responsibility. But deeper than just responsibility was that they stepped up to the plate, no shame, and they are ready to go bring a sacrifice that is a sin offering on behalf of their people without identifying their people. They'll take it upon themselves. They'll bring it. And that will provide atonement for the people. So it's a very beautiful concept that you see here, because this is a very interesting thing here with these Nesi'im. They really were coming in a way almost as individuals, but they're never really individuals. So it's an interesting idea. And they bring the Korban Chatas, no problem. They're going to bring it, L'chaper ba'adam, to provide atonement for all of the people. Let's see something, because I know we've done some of this orally, and I just want to see. Also, one very important thing, I think we did mention, but I just want to emphasize again, when we said about the different wagons that they brought, so they shared it, right? And that was a very important thing, because there had to be unity. Unity in the sense that they share bringing the wagon, you know, it has to be one wagon for two Nesi'im. That's how it works. Because that's the only way to assure Hashem's will rest his Shechina amongst the Jewish people. Just see if there was one more here. And we mentioned that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know to accept it because he thought that the Levim would have to carry everything. Okay. Now let's just go now to page 14. I'm going to show you one more thing inside here before we do that. Sicha. Okay, 14 on the bottom, there's a kliyakar. So the kliyakar tells us something. So I know the 14 is a little bit smaller on top, but if you look at the bottom of the page, it's circled kliyakar. It says, now we're talking about the one who brings the carbon on the first day. Samach parsha zu lebirchas kayanim. This Parsha comes right after, it's juxtaposed right after the blessing of the Kayanim. And we know, how did that conclude? Asher Choisem, Kol HaBrochis B'Shalom, concludes with the concept of peace. Ki Yemein Shalom, as we mentioned, if there's no peace, Ein Klum, there's nothing. L'fichach HaShalom Ba B'Gmar HaChasima, so the Shalom comes at the end, as we say, with the sealing. V'acharein Chaviv, and of course, what you end with, that's most precious. Ki Kol HaKoidmim Nira Ki Ilu Adayin Heim Chaseirim. Because when you're giving blessings, right, and if you continue to bless, so obviously what it seems to show is that there's something lacking in the one before. That's why you need another blessing, right? So until you get to the last blessing, you feel like, oh, there's still more, so that means I don't have everything. So the last blessing is the one that you always feel is the real top one of all, right? That's like the top, and that's true. As we mentioned, that was Shalom, which contains all the other brachas, as we said. So he says over here, ki ein tzarech oid b'shum bracha shahaba acharea l'maleis chesreina, right? The last one, you realize you don't need any more to fill it. There's no more lack. It's finished. Al kein ha-medrash m'shabeach v'aymer gadol ha-shalom shehu chaysim kol ha-brachas, right? Shalom is so great that it's the ceiling of all the brachas. Ki ze meira al-chisaren ha-brachas ha-kodmim. It shows us how the ones previous have a bit of a lack until you have shalom in them. Now, why are we getting to Shalom? I want to show you something beautiful. After it finishes all the sealing of all the brachos, which is peace. Miad hischil b'parsha, asher baramuz gam kein hashalim. That's why, immediately after Birchas Kayan, and we start with this parsha, this concept. What is this? Also to do with peace. This presence of the Nesiim. What does the Nesiim have to do with peace? So he says beautifully, ki mitam zen nemar barishon. That's why when we mention Nachshon ben Aminadav, we say v'karbonai, and his karbon. Now, if you say and, you don't usually say that with the first one. There's no and with the first one. And could be with the second one, right? Because you're continuing. But there's no and with the first one. It doesn't make any sense. Nobody came before. And what's and? So he says, why? Ki'ilu, now on page 15 on the top. Kadmai acher. It's as if somebody came before him. He didn't have pride saying, Ani hi krafti rishon, I was the first. He wasn't like, I am the ruler. Pride is the downfall of everything. That is the root source of any disunity, any disharmony, anytime there's no peace. What does Vim mean? When Nachshon brought it, he didn't feel like he was first, even though he was privileged to be first, and we know why. He jumped into the ocean. He was ready to give up his life. Nachshon deserved to be first, and the tribe of Yehuda deserved to be first. And yet, how did they feel? Equal to everybody else, as if they're coming after somebody else. This is something incredibly powerful for us. Like even one little letter, the little vav in the Chumash, already shows us that's meant to be our attitude. It's very interesting because when we do something good, and it's important to value that we're doing something good, and sometimes it could take a lot of effort, but we have to be careful not to feel that sense of arrogance. You can have confidence, you can have a certain pride, and obviously it can be contagious, the good we're doing, but arrogance is totally not acceptable, as we say, and a person has to be so extra careful, and we see how the Nesiim modeled that very, very much. Now, I want to show you, we're going to skip to, there's no number. Okay, skip two more pages, I think, in your booklet. On the top of the page, it says 111. I'm going to show you something very nice. Because last time we asked a question, and today we're going to answer. We wanted to know, when the Nesiim brought these wagons, and they were so excited, as we said. They were so excited. They finally could make up their lack, right? They were beyond excited. Why did they bring so little? Why didn't they bring more? Why, like, such a limited amount? So do you see where it says 111 on top? Yeah, beautiful. Okay, so we'll read some of this inside, some orally. So this is a very beautiful explanation. This is a sicha, and it says like this. B'parsha seinu, detzelti teira. In our parsha, the Torah tells us, v'hi b'yayim kalais Moshe, right? That tells us all, I'm not going to read all of it inside, that this was the day that Moshe Rabbeinu completed, that they were finished, they were building the Mishkan, and now the Nesiim were going to bring their special sacrifices, and they brought the six wagons. Now, the question in the second paragraph. So now we're in second paragraph. Is da in ganzen nit verstandig, it's not understood. Mi gefind das nit was ham mishken haben die jeden geben mit an de divas leiv b'yeser. When we look at, and actually this is this week's parashas that we're reading, you know, last week Vayakel and this week Pekudei, in Vayakel it says so clearly when the Jewish people brought their donations, they were beyond generous, right? That's what it says. The generosity was so much. We know what happens. Is given dayam v'hoiser. It was too much, right? It was enough and too much, as the Shabbos. So it was too much. They were so generous. So the question is, vi kumtis, the third paragraph, vi kumtis, as dafke nesiye Yisrael, haben bei nidvas ha'agolis, mitzamtzim given. So how could it be that the princes, the ones who are the leaders, when they came time for them to give their donation over here of these wagons, what do? They were so limited, and they contracted, you know, they limited. And Menadav given Yeder a halba, each one only donated a half a wagon, right? As we say, two Nesiim sheared a wagon. Nachmer, Benoigeya Nidvus HaNesiim, Shteitin Sifriu Medrish, Azarab Gebrachtin Perish Rashi. Okay, so this we said already, we know what happened when the Nesiim brought it. They were bringing it because they felt so bad about what happened before. So you could imagine what they're filled with, a feeling of wealth. A miracle that we have a second chance over here. You could imagine that they would dig deep and bring much, much, as much as possible to make up because they felt so bad. So we say, how could it be? Only a half a wagon each one? Now, if you look on the second column, Nochmer is nit verstandig. Vi verstandig from Pashtus HaKsuvim is azoishteit un azoishteit mfurash and medrish haben de nisiyim gebracht di sheish egleis tzav ushnei asar bakar. So lib losay says hamishkan, right? Why did they bring these wagon and these oxen to carry the mishkan? When azay is given bepoil, and actually that's what happened. V'mefurash and pasuk, the pasuk tells us very, very clearly that they were given the wagons according to their work, right? To the house of Gershon and to the house of Merari. Go to the next page. It's okay. So here we have okay. You know, sorry, in your booklet, we're just going to skip these two pages for a minute. Sorry, go to page that says 112. You have to skip two pages. Sorry. Shouldn't have done it that way. So the question is like this. Und das wissendig, die gargreuse mass, knowing the tremendous measure, the great measure, von die crushim, right, the boards, the crushim, und die amudim, and the beams, und haben die kashare wegen der mischkel, and having an estimation, even if they didn't know exactly, they knew how much they weighed. Und dazu kommen zu die 100 Adonim. There were 100 sockets. Each socket was one kikar. One kikar is 3,000 shkolim. 3,000 shkolim. Each shekel is about, what did I say? It's about 11 grams. So you can imagine we're talking about a lot of weight, a lot, right? Because interesting, if you think about it, every Jew donated a half a shekel, right? That went for the Adonim. So interestingly, a half a shekel went for the Adonim. You know what that means. Every single socket, as we say, was 3,000 shkolim, which means 6,000 Jews participated in each of the sockets. It's quite amazing. That's how, in other words, that's how the unity was created there. But it's a tremendous, that's only one. There are the crushing, the beams, they're massive, they're heavy. These are building. I mean, this is not stump. This is, and the Nesiim knew this. They did not know this. Everybody knew because they had already built it, right, when they brought this. So what's going on? What are they thinking? He says, and look, he says, was yeder von zeh is a kikar shel kodesh, right? Each one is what we call a kikar, which, as we said, is 3,000 shkolim, each one. So it's massive. It's a lot of weight. So what, and it goes over here, it goes into detail, we don't have time, in the Gemara, it's interesting, in Gemara Shabbos, it has a whole discussion about the way the wagons worked, because it shows us how wide the roads were. So the wagons was two next to each other, and there was a little bit of space in between, so there's four, let's say, so two, and then two behind them, and then there's another two of Gershon. But what would happen, something very interesting that happened, the Medrash explains, that actually I think Rashi even says it here. What happened is that they would load these wagons, so they would put 12 krushim on each, which means 12 long beams. I wrote down how much it's very big. They're very, very big. I have somewhere how big they are. If I could find it. I'm so bad with measurements, but I think it was each one of the crushim, it says, was 1.5, was 10 amos long. 10 amos, it says, is 4.5 meters. So each one of them, that's how long they are. And there was 12 on each of the wagons. And they had to put them in a certain way. And they had a bit of space in between so that they shouldn't bang against each other. But what would happen is when they were traveling, you could imagine things would move. So especially there's a little bit of extra space the way it's put on. And the Levim, what they would have to do is run behind. Constantly there were Levim that were running alongside and behind the wagon. And when a Keresh would shift, they would just sort of climb underneath and adjust it so that it shouldn't, God forbid, fall. That's what they were doing. Very interesting thing. That was part of the system made so that it's interesting that the Levim, although the wagons are officially carrying these boards and these Adonim, really the Levim were still carrying them because they're running after them and adjusting them the whole time. So without the Levim, they could have rolled off. So we're not taking away from the privilege that the Levim had in carrying. We're just assisting them with the wagons. Technically, that's one of the reasons. But what we see here is that these wagons carry tremendous, tremendous loads. Mamash, beyond. It's like a crazy amount. And this is where the question becomes very, very strong. And I'll show you even more. If it goes, look to the bottom of that column on page 112. Unsudem kum tsudi amudim va'adonim, right? So it's not just crushim, as we said, not just these 4.5 meters long boards, but there's also amudim, there's also the other boards, the other pillars, and the adonim, the sockets of the Mishkan. Unzechtzik amudei achatzer, and there were 60 more beams that were from the courtyard. Unzechtzik ad nechayshes, because there was 100 adonim inside. Then there's 60 adonim of copper, not silver. Undas alles hat min gedarft legen auf vier agolis. All of that has to somehow fit on four wagons. Crazy. So what's going on? This is the big question on page 112 in the second column. V'lech oiriz das heipech ha'anhaga von nedivus und von harchava. This is the opposite, seems to be the opposite of a conduct of generosity and abundance. And we like when we fill our Kiddush cup, we have it overflowing. In Yiddishkeit, we don't do things with like limited and, we want to, things should be abundant, abundant brachas, a lot. Especially you're serving Hashem, you want to show that you care, you love. When you love, you do things more, more, more. You don't do less. As he says, ein, and very interesting, also the wealth that was in the Mishkan. He says, ein anius b'makei mashiris, right? You don't have poverty in the place where there's wealth. You can't have poverty in the Mishkan. It doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. That's not honor. Und wenn es wollten gewen meragalis, wollten nit gedarft anlegen, as so viel crushim, ein auf die andere. If you would have more wagons, you wouldn't have to load them so much. So many pile, like so much heavy weight, one on top of the other. And also you would avoid the difficulty of zu achtun geben, to be so careful, kol haderech, the whole time when they were traveling. Then menfirti krashe amishkan oif diagolus, as we said, that the Levim had to run on alongside. Why? Okay, so there's a few very, very fascinating things. I want to read one part here. Okay. So he says like this, that the truth is, there's one answer that's given maybe, but then the Rebbe says no. So I'll show you something. Remember the krushim, what were they made of? Do you remember what material were they made of? The boards in the Mishkan. Oh, excellent. The wood that they used were shittim wood, right? Shittim wood was the wood that was planted by Yaakov, right? Yaakov took these cedar trees from Eretz Yisrael, planted them in Egypt. They took them with them into the desert. So they had a limited amount. So maybe, the reason they had only this amount of wagons was because the wagons maybe were made out of the shittim wood, and there's only a limited amount of shittim wood, so that's why they had a limited amount of wagons. It's not a good enough answer because nowhere does it say that the wagons have to be made of shittim wood. And we know, interesting thing, people are not so aware, but in the Medrash it tells us that when they traveled in the desert, there were actually tribes, like, not far alongside. They would sometimes buy things. We don't think of it that way. But they would. Remember, they had a lot of gold and silver from the Yam Suf. They had money, and they took from the Egyptians. So they would buy whatever they need. So they could have bought extra material to make more wagons. Who says it has to be shittim wood? Right? So that's not a good enough answer. Still not a good enough. So we have to understand why so specific and exact and limited it seems to be for such a massive load. Okay, I'm going to show you something beautiful. Let's see. Okay, so then in a nutshell, the answer that's given here is quite a magnificent answer. Even though we try to do things in abundance, we do, everything we do, as much as possible, like with our whole heart and our whole everything, but there's also a concept that everything that we do has to be counted and measured in the Mishkan. What does that mean? It means that every single thing that they donated to the Mishkan had to be used. Has to be used. Otherwise, if it's extra, if there's something that's extra, what does that mean? Could you imagine if you have an extra something? That means that that thing has not been designated as holy. Like, even think about it for a minute before. In Shabbos, I saw Orach Chaim. It was beautiful. The Jewish people had said they donated enough, but more, and then it says enough. More and enough. How could that go together? Never happened, eh? So what is more and enough? Either more or enough, right? Which one? So the Orach Chaim says like this, there was a miracle happened there. Really, they donated too much. But somehow, Hashem made a miracle that the Mishkan absorbed it all. Why? Because could you imagine if you would donate something and it wouldn't be used? That would be the most devastating thing for you. It's like the child who brings in for the party and her nash is not being used. I mean, you can't. It's devastating. It's not stam. So the Mishkan, every single detail in the Mishkan, first of all, the donations, but the actual Mishkan had a purpose. Every little millimeter was exact in measurement and was there for a purpose to serve Hashem. That's what makes it holy. It's specific in its need. Each one is needed for the service of Hashem, for the revelation of godliness. Now, when it came time for them to donate these agalos, the Nesiim, being the holy men that they were able to understand exactly what was needed to the tiniest, you know, measure, if you want to say. And that's exactly what they donated. Not one drop more. Why? Because they needed that it should be, the whole thing should be used, so there shouldn't be any part that's not being used. If you have a part that's not used, not only is it not holy, but it could actually even be the opposite of holy, right? Because that's like almost Baal Tashchis. That's not allowed in the Mishkan. That's not allowed in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, that's in a nutshell, an interesting insight. Why? But what does this mean for us? That is a magnificent, magnificent lesson. I want to show you something, because we're all a Mishkan, each one of us. Let me see something. Okay. And we say that they were inspired by Hashem, right? The Yisachar was inspired, and that's why he knew exactly how much they needed and exactly what enough to be properly used for the transporting of everything. Okay, look on page, I'll tell you what page, page 116. On the top it says 116. It's almost, oh, time is going fast. I want to show you two more beautiful paragraphs because of one beautiful lesson here. So he says, this is Oizvav, Al pi hanalas fashtandik, as kashem vien mishkan, just like in the Mishkan. Afal pi as is given hanhaga for nashirus, even though it was done in a way of wealth and abundance, is abrinit given ken ein prat to prat. There wasn't one detail, and no detail of a detail, velchiz nit oizkenutzt gevarim, that wasn't used entirely, tzuli ba pe'ula, for an action, v'inyin misuyam in Mishkan, and something specific for the Mishkan. Al derech zeh, on the second column, is b'naygeya tzu diagoloi subakar. So this applies, the same thing as we're saying, to the wagons and to these cattle. Vel chazayin achelik for Mishkan, they're also a part of the Mishkan. As das is gemust zayin b'mida, means to yekes, it had to be b'tachlis, like exact measurement. Lo yoyser, not less, but also not more. As esol nit zayin ken ein prat v'chelik, there shouldn't be one detail, not one part, das wird nit ausgenutzt für seinen Zweck, that shouldn't be used for its purpose. Trugen der Mishkan, to carry the Mishkan. Sein der Mida bekamus, both in the measurement in quantity, sheish agolos, mitzer midas miduyekes, nit merer agolos, and nit gresser agolos, couldn't be more, couldn't be bigger, the wagons, sayin dishnei asar bakar, whether it be in the cattle, the 12 cattle that lead these wagons. Okay, so even though they were heavy, it's true, but nevertheless, That's what Hashem wanted. And as we said, interestingly, Hashem also wanted Dafke, that the Levim should be needed, because that makes them also part of the important role that they play, which also means that the Mishkan was, in a way, all being carried. Even though the wagons were there, in a certain sense, it was so miraculous, and it was so exact, and it was with so much effort of the Levim, that it was almost like they were still carrying the Mishkan, because we said the Mishkan had to be carried. That's the honor of the Mishkan. So even the heavy boards on the wagons, as if they are being also carried, which means that's the human touch, if you want to say, the human important part that they play. Now, just to see the lesson, very important. Sorry if the skip. Again, 118, go to page 118, it's very important. Dihayra, so what's the lesson? Von dem ba'avaydus ha'adam. Chazal zogen as kol ma shebara kadosh baruch hu ba'ilamai, everything that Hashem created in this world, lai bara davar echad levatala. This is such an important line. There is not one thing that's extra. Hashem, as we say always, you know, the famous mashal is the perfect balabasta. There is not one extra thing in the world. Nothing. There's nothing in the world that doesn't have a purpose. Thus, their klal is alamol and umatum. This is always constant. Bechol chelke yuprate yabriya, in all parts of creation. In the making of the Mishkan, Vasdemol is given Basi Lagani Lagnuni, right? We know the Mishkan for sure. If this is in all parts of creation, the Mishkan, which is where Hashem comes into his garden, Hashem reveals himself, as Nachti Alachatan, after all the sins Vasham Gaim given Silakashina that caused the Shekhinah to leave, to depart, we know what happens is Yeridas Ashkina Lamata Baretz. When we built the Mishkan, then Hashem was finally able to come back. In the Mishkan, v'asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'seicham, and he dwelled there. When demalt bigmar melechas haMishkan, and then when at the conclusion of the building of the Mishkan, arayis gekum and begiloi v'ken shum prat is nitl v'atolachas v'shalom, it was revealed how there was not one detail that's for nothing. Nor yeder ain't a prat, every detail vert oiskenutz b'shleimus is used entirely for the tafkid, for the purpose for which it was created, and therefore he says, even though the conduct is in a way of wealth, but nevertheless, it cannot be extra. Yeah. Wealth is fine. You can do everything top quality, right? You can have the nicest, the best, the purest, and we'll see next week how pure the gold was, but nothing is extra. See, that's a very interesting thing, fascinating thing. Sometimes people don't know the difference. You can have like, where you come in somewhere, let's say you have come into a Shabbos table, it could be set so beautifully, and everything has, you know, everything's beautiful, it's wonderful, there's nothing wrong. But extra is not good, right? Bal tashchis is no good. But to do things top quality, best, if it's honor of Hashem, nothing wrong with that, that's fantastic. Now, what does that mean for each and every one of us? And this is such an important thing. We are all a Mishkan. So he says like this, I vifel erdar zayn nizhar as yeder koyach. Each one of us have to be so careful that every strength that we have, every detail that Hashem gave us, every talent, every ability, every opportunity that we have been given, we have to use it to its fullest. The Rebbe says it so strongly. He says, Ani nivresi l'shamish eskeni, I was created to serve my master. A beautiful line I want to read here. B'chol v'aster eibishter atem gegeben zol nitzayin levatala, right? Anything Hashem gave you shouldn't be for nothing. Nor ois nutzenim in der fullster must. You should use it in its fullest amount. V'ar der tachlis v'tafkit z'levelche der eibishter atem b'shafim. For what? The purpose for which Hashem created him. And that's why he says that if a person is given an extra special brain and they don't use it entirely, you're wasting. That's terrible. It's a terrible thing. Even if you're not given an extra special brain, whatever intelligence you were given, use it fully to understand. And he says, with your kishreinus, with your talents, your abilities, you have to use it all to serve Hashem in its entirety. When it comes to doing mitzvahs behider, you have to do as much as possible. And I want to read you one more paragraph. I know, oh my gosh, time is. He says, "Val derech zayichin zman in time, as a filu vener hatshein memalegven. Even if you filled, ungefilled, 23 shom at 59 minutes, you have a day of 24 hours." 23 hours and 59 minutes were used properly. Darfer sich mishtadel sein. He still has to put in effort. As euch die einzige übergebliebene Minute, the one leftover minute, soll nit gehen levatala, should not be for nothing, should be used properly. And this is the lesson of these wagons. It's exact. It's exact because that's how Hashem made the world. And we are also exact. So we should know in both ways that We have to use every part of ourselves, that we have what we need to serve Hashem, and that Hashem gave each and every one of us individual specific strengths that nobody else has, and we just have to make sure to use it. Use it fully, use it properly, recognize what it is, and use it to its utmost. And then we are doing what the Nesiim did, and donating 6 wagons, 12 oxen, but that's enough to carry the whole Mishkan. And that's a very powerful thing also. Sometimes, that's it. Sometimes we might feel we have too little. Oh, it's such a big load. I'm only 6 wagons. It's enough. It's obviously enough for your load. Hashem has given you what you need to be able to accomplish what you need to, but you have to use it fully. Every detail of every part of yourself, every talent, every ability. Okay, I'm going to...